Pam Casso. Sorry I'm late. I had to race across town.
Oh, Michael.
Wow. You did these? Freehand?
Yep.
My God, these could be tracings. Oh. Look at this one. Wow. You nailed it. How much?
What do you mean?
I don't see a price.
You want to buy it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we have to have it for the office. I mean, there's my window and there's my car. Is that your car?
Uh-huh.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you. Victory Tuesday. You'll be listening to this hopefully later in the afternoon. Giants 1-0. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Weiss, I'm fucking amped up. The New York Football Giants are 1-0. We both picked them to lose. 5.5-point road dogs go into Tennessee and shit in Vrabel's cereal. I am over the moon for a number of reasons. We saw on Sunday afternoon so many things that we are either, one, not accustomed to, two, have not seen in years, or three, are used to seeing quite frequently. However, it's happening to us and not the other football team. Let's break it down. Let's get into it. There was so much good. Obviously, a lot of bad, but let's start with the good. Let's be positive for a change because the last 4 years have been quite miserable.
Very.
Okay. Where do you want to start? Pick a topic. So I think we should start with the coaching. That's just me personally. Because I am in full bloom love with Brian Daboll.
Oh, yeah.
And what we saw after getting their shit kicked in the first half, can't move the ball. Defense actually played relatively well, all things considered, right?
I mean, you really well, I think.
Jihad Ward at defensive end, and it looked like virtually every single defensive lineman had stone shoes on. That's how slow that they were moving.
It looked like a third preseason game defense.
It really did.
Yeah.
And contained Derrick Henry, didn't let the Titans capitalize on all the Giants' mistakes, only give up 13 points in the half. Tremendous, tremendous work. And for Brian Daboll to go into the locker room at halftime down 13-0 in his first game ever as a head coach and to come out and adjust. We have not seen that in so long. A game plan that wasn't working in the first half to switch it up in the second half and to start putting points on the board was incredible. And we'll speak about this a little bit later, but I just want to sort of set the overarching theme here for the coaching staff. It's called building equity, okay? You build equity with the fan base. You build equity with the players. You are a leader of men on the football field for both the fan base and the players. You want these people to believe in you. Brian Daboll showed that this weekend.
Yeah.
Showed that for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, how do you get buy-in from your players? You show that you trust them to execute, and then they will show you that they trust you to set them up for success. And that is what we fucking saw on that 2-point conversion. Hey, if we get this, you want to go for it? They went for it, and they won the football game.
Yeah, I think for so many years, you know, I sat back and I would watch and I would see teams, you know, have this aggressive nature and be able to really, you know, win games like that and do, you know, we saw, you know, that level of aggression. I always used to wonder, like, why can't the Giants do that? You know, why is it that our head coach is sitting back and talking about
– And I'll add to that, there were a lot of excuses – for the previous regime, for Joe Judge, about why he wasn't being aggressive. Right. Oh, he doesn't have the personnel. His roster stinks.
His own excuses were bullshit. I mean, talking about like we want to play field position, have confidence in our defense, even though the majority of our resources are on offense. But just I had so much pent, like emotionally speaking, like I'm still emotional over that game, and I know it's just week one, but it's like for so long, like I've been sitting there and just like watching other teams do, like we talk about process, right? Like have the right process, get the right results. And I'm like, why can't we do that? Why are we not adjusting to the way football is? And just to finally do it and then to have the right process and get the right result. Like even if they would have lost, I still would have had like this emotion, like, okay, we had the right process, but to get the right results and to win the game. And like football is a game of luck. You're gonna get lucky, and him missing that field goal, I don't give a fuck. Fuck him.
Fuck you that. Listen, that's a good point. That's one thing that in my opening little monologue there. Something that we are not used to receiving, but we saw it constantly over the last 4 years.
Fucking 60-yard field goals did we lose a game? On?
I can't even count. Listen, would you rather be good or would you rather be lucky? Well, I'd rather be both. And the Giants were both on Sunday. And it wasn't just on the game-winning field goal, because Coach Vrabel, as good a first half as he had, he big-brained himself far too many times. I mean, there was the 3rd-and-1 with Derrick Henry where he was lining up with a wildcat. Yeah, exactly. He got cute. Why are you doing that? 3rd-and-3 where he's running a tight end. I don't even know. Basically, like a tight end reverse.
It was some weird fucking play. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, basically, he handed it off to the tight end, and they lost like 4 or 5 yards. They missed the field goal at the end of the game, which in any other game in the last 4 or 5 years – the Giants would have lost, right?
Right, right.
And the Saquon Barkley fumble, where he busts one for a million yards, fumble comes out from behind. Last 4 or 5 years, that ball stays in bounds and gets recovered by the other team.
Right,
okay?
Right.
It is so refreshing for those things to finally go our way. It really is.
And we had special team mistakes on our end, too. Remember the botched extra point?
The coverage was awful in the first half on the kickoffs and punts.
Look, I just think it was like all that pent-up emotion and anger that you built up over 4 years just watching like a directionless team, and it all came out of me in that game. And maybe it was because it was also week one, and to be 1-0 for the first time since 2016, that played a role too. But it just felt really good, man. And like, I want fans, like so many fans are like, I'm sold. I'm not like, just stay in the moment, right? Let's not worry about like the consequences of everything. Like there'll be a time and place where we discuss like the future of the quarterback or the future of the star offensive player. Like I just want people to live in the moment. Like I don't know how many of these types of moments we're going to have this season.
Agreed.
Just like live in it. Just enjoy it as a fan. The time will come when we can discuss all that other stuff, but I just want people to live in the moment.
Well, that's going to happen in about 5 minutes because we are going to discuss it. But in terms of stressing over it,
You don't stress over it. Like in the game, I'm thinking like, let's win this fucking game.
Same.
You know, now the quarterback. for them, like we talk about, like so as a team, you want to be able to have accountability. And I think Brian Daboll showed that he's going to hold people accountable with Kadarius Toney not playing as much, and then that sideline, whatever, with Daniel Jones. He said he was talking in a headset. He didn't have a headset.
He did not have a headset on. A worse liar than Joe Judge.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
He showed accountability. He showed he was able to make adjustments at halftime, right? If you remember, one of the downfalls of Tom Coughlin was he was not able to make adjustments at halftime.
Yep.
And the other coaches, I mean, I'm not even going to
couldn't make discuss adjustments, period. Yeah.
Right. His aggressive nature. You saw how he was aggressive going for two. Those three elements. And then the fourth one, and this is so important. One of the most important things about being a head coach in the National Football League is that you have to be able to put your players in position to succeed. You have to be able to get the most out of them. You have to be able to separate their strengths and their weaknesses and play to their strengths. A lot of coaches don't do that. They have a system. They want the players to fit their system. Brian Daboll has a system. But what he wants to do is when he has a player, and it doesn't matter if it's a first-round pick, a high-priced free agent, a UDFA, a rookie, whatever. He wants to locate their strengths and play to those strengths. And that is so important because when we talk about overachieving and winning football games, a lot of teams that don't have these all-world rosters, how they're able to win games is because their coaching staff takes their players' strengths and puts them in position to be successful. And that's what Brian Daboll is doing. That's why when they trotted out their different types of receivers and different types of defensive linemen and Austin Calitro is playing linebacker and they're still able to find success and they're not able to, you know, Tennessee's not going up and down the field and scoring on them is because they're putting their players in positions to play to their strengths and be successful. And that is so important for a head coach and for a coaching staff. And the fact that Daboll did that in week one, to me, that has to be sort of like such a refreshing thing and makes you feel like, okay, that's a very important attribute for a head coach. And it's only week one, but he showed that and he has that. Now, can we see more of it?
Absolutely. And I think that plays into the Kadarius Toney drama, so to speak. Let's talk about Daniel Jones, though, real quick.
Yes. He almost threw the game away.
And I think it's again, it's like, I don't think we've seen larger confirmation bias in the fan base than we have with Daniel Jones. It's especially for the Daniel Jones truthers and the Daniel Jones homers who just look at his QBR and his completion percentage and are like, oh, well, outside of the interception, he had a good game. No, he didn't. He wasn't very good.
He missed two or three
big throws.
Right.
That would have been like the explosive plays, as Warren Sharp likes to say, right?
There you 20 go.
Plus yards. Where, and if you were an avid listener, if you have a play of over 15 yards on the drive, your chances of scoring points go north of 50%. So
look at that. I like
there
that.
Oh, math brain. I know it's early in the morning, but I still got it. I mean, listen, he missed a couple big throws. He had that god awful interception in the end zone where Brian Daboll is screaming at him on the sideline because, quite frankly, that was unacceptable. And then one thing that I noticed, he looked slow. Like, I don't understand. Like, people were trying to make excuses for it or try to guess. He just didn't have, like, a leg injury last year. Like, he's been totally healthy this entire preseason. He looked almost as slow as our defensive line looked. And on top of that, there was another one where they rolled him out on, I think it was third down, like, third and three. And he, like, slipped. Like, if he had just gunned it for the sideline, he would have had that first down easily. And he just slipped and fell. I thought he had a bad game. I still don't think that he is the quarterback of the future. But you know what?
You're in the moment.
Listen, the Giants won. I'm not going to start arguing with Daniel Jones truthers. I have to believe that my GM, Joe Shane, and my head coach, Brian Daboll, are smarter than that. So on we go. Anything to add on Daniel Jones?
I see all the time, well, besides the red zone interception, he wasn't that bad. Okay. But the red zone interception almost fucking lost us the game.
Yes.
And it was fucking horrendous. And I was so angry that if like I always say, there's no point in benching Daniel Jones and the whole conversation about Tyrod and Daniel Jones. But I was so fucking angry that I was like, if this guy benches him, I have no problem with it. I mean, I don't understand. Like there were still people talking about like, well, Saquon could have made a move on the ball. I'm like, what are you talking about? He threw it right to the defender.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want him to do? Like, you want him to ask, you know, Amani Hooker, like, hey, can you please not catch this ball?
Yeah.
Like, can you please not intercept this ball? It's just, like, he did not play well. I don't care about, like they're talking about passer rating. Like, I don't.
Yeah, QBR.
When do we use passer rating as a metric nowadays?
ESPN made it up. Like,
I don't understand why he did not play well, missed throws, again, nearly cost us the game.
Yep.
Not one of those games where you're like, oh, check, told you he's a franchise quarterback. No, it's actually the opposite.
Yes.
And I think if he makes more mistakes like that, I am really starting to wonder what his leash is because Brian Daboll went off on him on the sideline.
Yep. Yep. All right. So that was the bad. Let's talk about the good.
Or Saquon Barkley.
The really good.
Yeah.
The excellent, some would say.
Can I say it? That was the best performance.
I could not agree with you more. Could not agree with you more.
And I'll give you an example. That two
I already point know. The 2-point conversion and those two run plays that you tweeted out. Dude, I got into arguments with some dumbass fans that were like, "Oh, I thought Saquon Barkley dances." Like, yeah, he used to.
Yeah,
and something clearly changed in his game with this coaching staff. Those, I agree with you. If you haven't seen it, go to Weiss's Twitter, check it out. Those were, I'm not kidding. Like, outside the 2-point conversion, those two runs were my favorite plays that he made all day.
Has he caught that pass and it goes like no gain or he runs out of bounds?
A million times. You know what? Marshawn Lynch has a phrase for that. Run through a motherfucker face. Yeah, and that's what Saquon Barkley did. Lower the shoulder and get those gritty yards. It blows my mind that some people just don't understand how big of a difference like those extra 3 to 4 yards
big
can
time.
Make.
Big
you
time.
Go 2nd and 5 versus 2nd and 8. I mean, like it's a big difference.
You're talking 2nd and 10 versus 2nd and 7. Like there's a huge difference. And then not just his ability to put his head down. On that 2-point conversion play, the offensive line didn't execute blocking well.
No, they had him dead to rights.
Yeah. He got his face mask pulled on a little bit. He recovered and was still able to run it in. Like, to me, that is the prime example of a player taking a team and putting them on his back. And that's exactly what Barkley did. We talk about impact in the game. Saquon Barkley on Sunday was the best player on the field by far on both sides. And he showed that he can will the team to victory, where you can put it on his shoulders and he'll do it. He had explosive run plays. I don't really care much about explosive run plays because I've seen Saquon go 40, 50, 60 yards. I've seen that. For me, what was important is the fact that he was getting every single yard possible. It wasn't a situation where it's like, oh, no gain, a yard, no gain, 60 yards. No, it was 5 yards, 4 yards, 7 yards. Okay, here's a 60-yarder. Here's a 15-yarder. And then here's me breaking a tackle, getting hit in the line of scrimmage, and still being able to get positive yards.
Exactly.
Those types of things were important. And I thought, look, I thought he was going to have a monster season. I said, I think it's going to be a season that it's going to be better than his rookie year. I truly believe that. There's a lot at stake for him, both, you know, in terms of his career and future in the NFL, and a lot of money at stake for him as well. And again, we can, like, those discussions about paying and we can, right now is not the time, like, enjoy this, and then we'll talk about that when the time comes.
Agreed.
Monster performance by Saquon Barkley.
Put the team on his back. I agree with everything that you just said. And another thing, and we spoke about this endlessly during the offseason, during the preseason, was about Saquon Barkley's, dare I call them, corny comments all offseason, talking about how no one believes in him, how, you know, he's going to have this monster season, he's playing with a chip on his back, and we were sick of it. And it was even to the point where Xavier McKinney came out a week ago with a quote with the essence of essentially talk is cheap, play the game if you want to prove people wrong. And it sounded almost like a direct shot at Saquon. Mm-hmm. A lot of chatter. And for him to go out there and finally prove it.
He has a lot of pent-up anger. You can
of course
tell
he
the
does.
Way, the way
bro,
he runs.
Like, you know, it's like the SpongeBob clip where they're all looking at him in the kitchen and he goes, that's what we've been waiting for. Yeah.
I think
we wanted all along. And that's literally what we've been wanting all along, is for him to be healthy, to just shut up and play, and to fucking get those gritty yards. And he did all three of those on Sunday. And it was electric. It was awesome.
Yeah. I think what you're basically saying is that pent-up anger that you have, just take it out on the field.
Yeah.
Because every time he ran, it felt like the ground was shaking. He is a beautiful runner, by the way, too.
Of course.
The way he runs that ball, it was beautiful. It was Saquon heroics, really put the team on his back. Defensively, Wink Martindale, I think, deserves a game ball.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, for him to do what he did with a secondary who, I mean, I said this during the preseason, but Adoree Jackson hasn't played a full season since 2018. Xavier McKinney, you know, we like what he can do, but still young. So
emerging. He's still emerging.
Right. He's emerging. That's well put. And then a defensive line missing their top two pass rushers, an interior that can't get any pressure, and a linebacking core that is fit for a practice squad. And yeah, he held.
Although Tate Crowder is
no,
starting to.
No. Listen, I think that you're a bit enamored by that play where he just came in and he absolutely demolished Derrick Henry. Outside of that, I didn't think he had that great of a game.
Okay, that's fine.
And listen, the two things that we both agreed on when we were talking about this team and the roster makeup during the preseason was that other teams are going to use their running backs and their tight ends to exploit the Giants linebackers. And oh, baby. Yeah. Hilliard with two touchdowns, some big catches, just absolutely burning the Giants.
I think Tennessee limited Derrick Henry snaps because they saw that mismatch with Hilliard on the linebackers.
Hey, I wouldn't blame them. I mean, yeah, you know, and the Giants did a really good job of containing Derrick Henry. So between that and the linebacking situation, you know, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad decision. But yeah, Vrabel did big brain himself a few times. So good on Saquon Barkley. Good on Wink, man. I mean, I tweeted this, but it is so underrated that in back-to-back, I mean, seasons, but also just defensive coordinator tenures, that we had Patrick Graham and now we have Wink Martindale. Like, I just think that that's so underrated. Yeah. And Giants fans should not take that for granted. So that's my pretty much overall thoughts on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I think, too. I think it's I mentioned it. When you have coaches that are able to get the most out of players and put them in position to be successful, that is a huge attribute for a coach. And it looks like Wink Martindale has it, Brian Daboll has it, and I think that's very, very important for the Giants moving forward, not just this season, but for years to come.
Agreed.
So I really want Giant fans to enjoy this. I think we all deserve it. I don't know how many games we're going to win. I still don't think it's going to be a lot.
No, right? Me neither. And listen, I mean, again, the hype train gets rolling and people see the Giants as 2.5-point favorites at home against the Carolina Panthers. Yeah, I mean, especially with the Cowboys being what they are now, and, man. I mean, that's going to be an absolute disaster.
Things change, but they do. I just want people to stay in the moment.
Right.
That's all
again,
I want.
It's not about this season.
Right.
If they pull off some miracle shit, oh, man, I'll be ecstatic, over the moon. But just let's stay focused here.
It's one week at a time, right? The cliche thing.
Yeah. It's about making sure the players learn the system, seeing what you have on the current roster.
Individual player development.
Right, exactly. Okay, speaking of individual player development, let's touch on Kadarius Toney.
I think he's lacking. Here's the thing. There's two arguments to this, and I see both sides. He's a very explosive player, and the Giants lack a player like that, and especially with injuries to their receivers, with Wandale Robinson going down, you would think, okay, play Kadarius Toney.
Sure.
But there seems to be issues between him and a lack of trust that he has, or lack of trust the coaching staff has with him, and it's pretty evident because he's not playing. Richie James is playing over him. David Sills is playing over him. Sterling Shepard, who had that great touchdown. I'm so happy for Sterling Shepard, by the way, too.
Yep.
And I just think that he has to prove it. Now, I don't think this is a permanent thing. I think he's going to get more snaps going forward. But fantasy tip, by the way, there's a fantasy tip of the day. Don't drop Kadarius Toney in any of your leagues if you have him. But I just think right now they're really trying to and it was a weird thing. There was a quote from the summer where Brian Daboll said that Kadarius Toney is still learning to play receiver.
Yeah.
And I didn't really care for it at the time, but now it's like, okay, now I get it.
But dude, this was like a thing under Joe Judge too. Like, listen, I think that this is so cut and dry, so straightforward that like I personally just don't understand how people don't get it. Right. Like it's very much just like follow the breadcrumbs. Like he had the same issue under Joe Judge. He's now having the same issue under Brian Daboll. You can't miss practice time in new schemes and expect to be 100% up to date. Like I really don't see why that's such a controversial take. Like I don't care how talented you are. If you don't know the full playbook or you don't have the necessary reps to get out there, then it is what it is. Like, I don't care that he was healthy the last 2 weeks. Look at the schemes that they ran. How many times did we see Sterling Shepard and David Sills come in to block? Reps matter, right? Is Kadarius Toney going to do that? Is he good at that? Does he have the reps? No. Did he still have the trust of the coaching staff in the 2 moments that he did touch the ball? Yes. I expect that these reps are going to increase fairly significantly over the next 4 weeks. It worries me 0%.
Yeah, if he's on the bench Ryan, come week four, then yeah.
This worries me 0%. I fully expect the reps to increase as the weeks go on. And Brian Daboll, this early on, that's how impressed I am with him, has earned my trust to do with these players as he wishes.
Accountability. Limit your reps for your wide receiver. Accountability. And, you know, not take it easy on your quarterback when he makes a terrible decision and almost costs you a game.
I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think Kadarius Toney's a good blocker? Do you think he's a good blocker? Do we know that?
I don't know. I was never.
I don't think we know.
I don't remember. I was never on board with this whole breakout season thing. Like, people were talking about this.
I know you weren't, but no. But seriously, the game plan yesterday called for a lot of wide receiver blocking.
Yeah,
I don't think that there. Like, I don't think he blocked in college. Like,
I think the counter is to that is that you don't. He's not supposed to be the blocker in that sequence. He's supposed to be the guy with the ball in his hands. But I think
okay, but if they're going to run the ball with Saquon, I mean,
yeah. No, I'm with you. I see both sides.
It is what it is.
I just think that he's not had built trust with the coaching staff, and yeah, as he sort of ramps up that trust, I will say, if he's not on the field, like if he's playing 10 snaps a game in week 8, then you should be concerned. But right now, you're just looking at a player who's trying to build up his trust level with the coaching staff.
Yep.
So reaction.
What else?
That's it. I think we covered everything. We covered everything. I really, really, really – I had a lot of pent-up anger that I let out on Sunday, man. Yeah, I was in my basement, and I was yelling F-bombs, get the fuck out of here. Fuck. Like, Tennessee did nothing to me, but it's like, fuck Tennessee. Right. Get the fuck out of my face, Mike Vrabel. Like, it was – and I hate the Titans kicker, by the way.
Bullock
is one of those players that you just Bullock, and then and in baseball, I hate the Astros pitcher Jose Urquidy.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
there's a backstory there too from the ALCS years ago.
I'm sure.
Those are two guys I cannot stand.
All right. That's it for us. Victory Tuesday, and coming up this week. Recurring guest. We're going to be bringing on Will Brinson to help us preview the Giants-Panthers Week 2 game. So stay tuned for that. Will's great. And follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow us at NYG Daily, the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. You know the drill. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
Peace.